Namaste. One of the things which is missing in our entire understanding of life, our own life and the life of planet Earth, is the play of forces, the web of forces which in which our life moves. So we do understand a little bit about the physical web. So physical scientists have explored, and they have found that behind every phenomenal object there is a web of forces which keeps the object the way it is. But just as there is a material web of forces, there is a psychological web of forces, vital web of forces, mental web of forces, subconscious web of forces, and superconscious web of forces. So the yogin has perfected this knowledge. And we'll find its elaborate description in yogic literature, especially the tantra deals about it. And if we want to really progress integrally and walk on the path of yoga, it is important to know it. If we don't want to, if we want to just lead the life just as we have been leading, then there is no need to know about it. Except that, then we accept life as it comes. There is pain, there is suffering, there is thodi khushi, thoda gham. There are all kinds of things happening, and we don't have to bother about why it is happening, because we have a standard argument, and that argument is the law of karma. So blame it all on karma, whatever it is. But what really is the law of karma? Law of karma is basically an evolutionary law, and it is one way through which we get to understand about this web, but a very indirect way. What is the way? You touch something, it burns, so you understand it is fire. You jump into the, you know, law of karma. Sometimes it reminds me like the story of Daedalus and Icarus. So they are the second pioneers in flight. The first pioneers were Jatayu and Sampati. They dash to the ground. They are reborn as Daedalus and Icarus. They are also dashed to the ground. They are reborn as Wright brothers. This is, don't quote me. But the story of Daedalus and Icarus goes that they want to fly. So it's wonderful. So they start thinking how to fly. So they look at the birds and they see birds are flying very nicely. So they decide that if we have wings like birds and we flap them like birds, we will fly. Now you see, this is what happens when you look at a yogi and try to imitate him without understanding how his inner life is moving through. So they develop wings and they tie it to the hands. And to hold the wings together, the different feathers and everything, they use wax. So because wax is a way with which they glue the wings. So the wax is used and they have huge wings. And Daedalus, the elder one, and Icarus, the younger one, they want to fly. So they decide that from a cliff they will run to gather speed. And when they enter in, beyond the cliff, they will start flapping the wings. So as the story goes, as they are about to, rush, Icarus, the younger one, is too much enthusiasm. So he, starts rushing. And Daedalus says, just hold on. Don't fly too high. And he just ignores because he's in excitement, enthusiasm. So he runs and he jumps. And, it's a very sad story, because the moment the wax comes in contact with the sun, it begins to melt. And as he tries to fly, he eventually goes down into the ocean and dies. It's a very tragic story. Now, our story of Jatayu and Sampati is far more, easier, because they both try to fly to the sun and Jatayu shields him. Sampati falls down and Sampati loses his ability to fly but has the vision intact. In fact, his vision has developed. So in yoga also, it's possible that a time comes when, because of the inner development, you can see but you cannot execute. And one of the capacities of the supramental world or the possibilities, what you see, you create. The knowledge and will go together. So nevertheless, in this story of Daedalus and Icarus, it is understood in many ways. One of the ways is that it's not enough just to know about the wings. You have to understand how things work and operate in this world. Enthusiasm and excitement is not enough. Many people undertake yoga out of enthusiasm and excitement. Oh, this is so wonderful. And they jump off the cliff. Of course, in our yoga, the big safety is that it is not by our own effort. And that's why Sri Aurobindo explains again and again. People don't understand that it's not just a emotional thing. It's for our own safety. Because there are many, many Icarus and Daedalus amongst us who don't understand anything about anything. Yet we believe, no, I can do it with my own effort. Why? What is the need of... It's all emotional. Bhakti is all emotional. Not realizing it is the big safety. At one place, Mother says, divine love is the great cushion which prevents us from... It's like the mattress which prevents us from breaking our bones when we fall. So, nevertheless, it's good to understand this web of forces. So, ordinarily, there are two network of forces. Leaving aside now the... vital, physical, mental, but this entire physical, vital, mental is basically the lower network of forces. Why it is called lower? Not in any pejorative sense, because nowadays, you can't use a word like lower and higher. So, but in the sense that it keeps us tied to the outposts of ignorance. You will know everything within that realm, even if you can know. Though you cannot know everything till you know the source. But you won't know the most important aspects of our own life. One cannot know the soul when one is struggling in this network. You cannot know the divine. It is like a blinder. So it creates an ignorance. It's like, to take this example of cannot know the most important thing. It's like there is a famous book written by Richard Dawkins, The Blind Watchmaker. So, there are many people who try to explain the universe based on nature. That, you can study nature and that's it. Why call it God? So, I take this analogy. You can take a car and study all the parts and know how to reassemble it. You know all about the car. Do you? It's just a machinery, Who is going to use it? What is it meant for? What are its issues? You will know only when the car begins to move on the path. So this is the important element, that the purpose of creation of a life, the owner of the car, you may study all the parts of the car, you will never know the owner. The owner is known only to the garage owner or, if he comes. But not to take the analogy that far, but basically by studying all the aspects of human creation, nature, the mental nature, the physical nature, the vital nature, you won't get to know who is the owner, who is the user of this instrument. So, even when we perfect the car and don't care about the user, what does it mean? You have a car which is fantastic and you give it to a 10-year-old kid, 4-year-old kid. So he thinks it's an airplane and he turns it into airlines. And then what happens? The whole thing boomerangs and crashes. So in yoga, that's why the preparation, this understanding is needed. So what really is this play of forces? The lower play of forces is the play of the physical, vital and mental forces, if you look at it in very simple way. And they hold us back to the old way of life. And in this physical, how does it hold us back? It will give you ideas of, it's too much of an effort, the yoga part. Okay, we'll do it tomorrow, tamas. Are meditation, I can't meditate. If I meditate, I fall sleepy. So I have asked sometimes people that, how long have you tried to meditate? So they will say, 2 months I tried. Now, there are people who for 40 years will say the same thing. But they've never tried. Because they've accepted this suggestion, it's not possible. Because I sleep, doesn't matter, sleep, try. So this is one example I'm giving. No, we can't read Sri Aurobindo's works. I gave that example of that, people having book in 20 years. Maybe if I would have said I can't read now, understand now, let me just try to read a page or two. At least they would have finished Savitri. At least they would have finished prayers and meditations. But they don't. So this is the inertia, obscurity, resistance to change. Okay, fine, very good, I feel good factor. But the resistance to change all the old ideas, habits, patterns, our nature and its gati, as it is going on, pre-yogic days. So you have schools reunion, your college reunions, but when you have taken to life of yoga, the only union is satsang. It cannot be, one can't put one's feet in two boats. Ki, this I will also do, enjoy life, and this I will also. There is nothing wrong in that. But that's a stage of growth. If we are not ready to leave it, then we are not ready for the yoga. That's how one has to understand. It's not to judge anybody or say this is right or wrong. That's the, it's a stage. You have gone through that stage. And if you have not gone through that stage, go through it. Better. Finish it. Done with it. But when we take to the yogic life, things become serious. This is how Sri Aurobindo has said. He said if you are going on a cycle, you may fall. At the most, you will cry for a while. A bit of bandage or something will be required. But if you are flying in airplane, you can't afford to misconduct it. So this is the way we have to understand. Then there are the vital forces. They are the most illusory, most deceptive. 1001 excuses for everything. And they are so full of charm. Here, there, everywhere. And you know, sometimes they will put you back onto the trail of the body. Sometimes they'll put you on trail of, you know, the emotions and the entire range of, you know, ambitions and everything. And they will all be given very beautiful justifications by Messer's mind. This mind will give another kind of justification for it. And, this is life. All life is yoga. After all, you know, life has to change. So why I will lead my life and it has to change. But this is not what Sri Aurobindo has said. He has never said that you just continue with life just as it is and keep remembering God and it will automatically change. It won't. There has to be an aspiration and a will for change. And first step is to connect with the divine mother. This is the first step. And if you are just remaining on the surfaces of life, it is impossible to connect with the divine. It's just impossible. It's trying the impossible. That I'll continue with life just as it is and one day suddenly, you know, I'll have a revelation and God will present time, you know. So, all life is yoga, yes, but it has three steps. First is when we are going through the surfaces of life, we are playing rock and roll, but to the not the Ras Leela, and we are being pushed, as Mother has said, mind like a public square. Filled with all kinds of thought. And somehow, 5 minutes we'll have an aspiration. Oh, life must change. Yes, yes, yes. You know, Sri Aurobindo has said, Mahavakya. So I am in the midst of life and changing it. It doesn't work like that. This is the ordinary life, where a man is at the mercy of these forces. And he stumbles, he falls, he suffers, he remains. Sometimes he's happy. All kinds of things. Thoda kushi, thoda gam. And at the end, he is fire or graveyard. This is it. Come back again. But then the second step is when you are done with it, something within says, this is not what I want. It's not that vairagya that, you know, oh, I am a disappointed fellow. I failed in my IIT. I failed in my GRE. I failed in this. I think let me try God. God will say, my child, go back. Don't come back to me with a disappointed heart. The Gita says very beautifully, yoga is done with a glad heart. Come with a glad heart. Divine is not somebody whom you go saying, main thaka hara dukhi atma. No. He's a ananda, he's a, you know, don't feel like using the word object, but he is an object of joy, supreme joy. How can you go to him with all this? Of course, we can go to him with a sunken face and sullen face and he will uplift us because that's his job description. He will do it. But that's not yoga. That is the artharthi and the art. So every time he will lift us up, he will give us a little advice or two. Peter, don't do this. It will lead you to sorrow. Yes, yes, yes. But thank you, God. And then go back. Let's do it again. Then again. Then again. So that's one kind of life. So the second step, stage of yoga, is when we understand the necessity of divine in our life. Is he really so important? Do we really feel that he is the indispensable one in our life? What is our life without him? Or is he just an abstraction somewhere in the sky? Some concept that people speak about. People make everything into concept. The concept of divine. The only reality is a conception to the mind. But nevertheless, that's training and striving. So, a time comes when all these surface splendors of the surface never sate. This is a beautiful poem. There is a need within the soul of man, the splendors of the surface never sate. For life and mind and their glory and debate are a slow prelude to a vaster theme, a preface to the epic supreme. So a time comes when we say, okay, this cannot satisfy me anymore. Then one is ready for the life of yoga. Then real life begins. And we begin to seek that which is greater. Now when you begin to seek that which is greater and higher and more beautiful, the truer, the truest of the true, then we have to, you know, keep this behind. Because now it's a one-pointed effort in that direction. You can't, you know, have one hand given to the, you know, the lower network of forces and say, I like you, I am coming, at the same time say, mera haath pakad ke rakhna. You know, divine will not allow that, because if he pulls with jhatka, then it'd be like, dheere se jhatka, jor se. You know, you'll feel broken. Then you'll say, what a cruel guy you are snatching away all my pleasures and toys. And if he lets you free, then you will say, what kind of a god you are. So poor fellow, he has caught in a dilemma, conflict. So he just holds the finger and says, okay, done with it. But he will never allow us to fully have the joy. Once he has touched the finger, he will gently exercise the pressure. So a time comes when you realize, jana to udhari hai, this is the path. He is not letting me enjoy this. He will not let you. Because now you have touched a little finger to him. So then a time comes when he says, let go, enough. And you enter that a cave of darkness guards the eternal light, immortal light. Then that is the second stage. You are stepping out of that zone of forces. And it is what a release. You begin to feel so light. Thoughts, third network. Minds, ideas, opinions, viewpoints, everything. Freedom of speech, liberty and license, all walking together. So a time comes when you say, but where is truth? I don't know. See, that's when the journey of truth begins. When all the concepts, percepts, systems, theories, beliefs, this book, that book in which we are entrenched, a time comes when we say, but you know, this is not complete. I want error-free sight. Look at Aurobindo in 1920, he's writing a letter to Barinda. What is it that he wants? He says, I want a perfect perfection, nothing short, no error. And there is a writing in Essays, Divine and Human, I don't remember the date, I think it is 1912 or 13. iPad, better you search in that. Essays, Divine and Human, what is it that I seek? If these things do not satisfy me, just take it out and I'll read it later. Look at the aspiration. If these things do not satisfy me, it is either CW essay 12 or 13. If these things do not satisfy me, he's seeking for something greater. Not a little bit emotional drama and, you know, going dancing before God. Hare Rama, Hare Krishna, Jai Radhe Ma, and, you know, feeling very happy about it. Radhe Ma will not like the original Radha. You know, bliss is ananda. Complete absence of seeking for pleasure. Then only, you know, she will, if there is a seeking for pleasure, you can't have Radha and, you know, all this kind of pleasureful activities, this dance dramas. No. In fact, she doesn't like drama. If you look at Radha's story, Radha never did any drama. Oh, you know how much I love him. She was sitting quietly and silently when Uddhav goes. All the gopis are snatching and everything. See, so beautiful it is, shows the vital love and the love which is so profound. And it's a pointer. This is a preparation, but that is the stage. And they go and ask, he goes and asks Radha, why are you sitting so quietly? You are not, you don't want to know what Krishna has written and sent. He said, yes. Of course, I know. I don't need to read a letter for that. And at one point when, you know, she is told that he has, you know, left. He says, but where has he left? He's all the time with me. And then when he sits, he understands in her radiance. He can see and feel Krishna. That is the stage in which, you know, one has to rise. You know, people often complain, but where are Mother and Sri Aurobindo? Right now, I'm not discussing about where they are. But if you feel that you can't find Mother and Sri Aurobindo, it's our job to discover them so utterly that where we go, we feel and everybody feels the presence of Mother. Where has he gone? When, you know, someone asked this in 1951 or something, you know, about Sri Aurobindo, where has he, you know, about his departure. I think Kapali Shastri. He said, but where has he gone? Where has he gone? So that is yoga. Where has he gone? Search and search and search till the mother becomes our sole reality. Such a living presence that if somebody comes and is going to ask, where is the mother? Stops, says, mother is there in this entire creation. I mean, don't, little twist can change everything. It doesn't mean you see a human being and feel a presence, say, you are mother, please. mother is mother. But what I'm saying is that you can come in contact. That's what yoga is about. Shri Krishna's disappearance from Vrindavan was so that everybody seeks him with an ardor and finds him inside, and that's what happened through the ages. So this seeking, when we are not satisfied with any mental concept, theories, beliefs, God exists, it's a belief till we have found him. Then real journey begins, then we begin to come out of this network of forces in which we are trapped. Even belief systems can become a trap. They are a trap at one level. The heart, so God has said, love everybody. You know, Vaishnava, somebody asked Sri Aurobindo, he said, you know how easily all love changes into all lust? Love everybody. So I am giving jadu ka jhappi, and you know, then in the process, one jhappi will not be that jadu will be different jadu. That will be Medusa. An embrace can be Doom's iron cage. It's there in Savitri, a line in Savitri. An embrace that can be Doom's iron cage. So these are the facts of spiritual life. If one doesn't want to know, it's up to people. The company we keep, all spiritual literature speaks about it, not only Mother and Sri Aurobindo. What is it, that famous line of Guru Nanak, which often I quote? Kaam krodh sangati durjan ki taase anish bhago, sadho man ka man tyago. You think your mind can sort out the problems of the world? Try. Okay, fine. I'll say try. But the path is not like that. The path is, I have come to you, Mother Sri Aurobindo, tell me how to walk. And when they tell us how to walk, to obey it and just follow it. That's the path. Sri Aurobindo is given freedom. That's his greatness. How I use my freedom, that's my intelligence. They have given freedom because they know that even at the, my child, even if he reaches the end of the rope and is about to hang himself and says, Lord, save me, I'll come. That is his greatness. His absolute might. He gave freedom through Ravana also. And see what happened. So that giving freedom is true. But freedom means he has given us a choice. It means that we have a choice whether we subscribe to this lower life, the lower creation, or we seek the new creation. Because it has to be in a free choice. It's not a convent or a monastery where people are told to follow with a stick in the hand. And no, that's not the way of change. Change comes with a conscious choice. You can't beat people into outwardly wearing a certain cloth, a dress, and saying that, look here, now he is sannyasi so and so. All the ambition, everything is inside. So freedom means, Sri Aurobindo and the mother, because people often say, oh, there is so much freedom. What it means is, read the behind the lines. It means you choose. You choose in your freedom whether you want to belong to the old creation or you want to belong to the new creation. What if we want to belong to the old creation? Go through the normal schooling process. Mother Diti, darkness teaches us through pain and suffering. What about the new creation? New creation is a sunlit path, joyous. Oh, but there is a transition. It's not that tomorrow, okay, wonderful. It will give me happiness. So this is the other trick of the mind. Not because of God, but because, you know, it's a happy path. It's a different kind of joy. And it's not like you just take a leap from here. There is a moment where you are transiting. As Sri Aurobindo describes, in ordinary life, it tastes sweet in the beginning. But as we grow older and older, it becomes bitter and bitter. Because there is poison right below. The last draught that you drink is the draught of death. And the divine life, it is very bitter in the beginning. Please don't apply it to physical things. And don't give Karela juice. Misquoting it. But the point is that it is bitter. Naturally, you have to do things which you don't enjoy doing. Things which you don't appreciate. You are happy doing certain things. Suddenly you are asked to do certain things which you don't enjoy. So it is bitter. To the vital nature, certainly it is bitter. But as you drink it, toward the end, you have finished the poison draught and Shiva is absorbed inside. Toward the end, you have the nectar of immortality. That is the story of Samudra Manthan. So in the beginning, when we take to the life of yoga, it is bitter. You know, people will misunderstand you. You will feel lonely. You will feel alone. You will see that within you, things which are hidden, they will come to the surface. Anger and lust and greed. You thought you are a very good guy. Everybody else is bad. And see how good I am. Don't you see every day I go to samadhi, sit in meditation, I can give lectures, people regard me as somebody great. All these illusions you will have. Different kinds of illusions also. I am a great doctor, you know. I have seen people walk, you know, with. You meet them and they will say with their, have you read my book? Which book? Don't say that, you know. Which book? You don't know. My book? You don't know? Are there are millions of books. Is it a bestseller? Oh, it's not in that category. So, what difference does it make? What difference does it make? All these things. So, there are several ways all this will come. So, we have to understand that, no, this is what we want. This is the choice. At every moment, even in Sufi mysticism, a Muslim friend of mine told me something very beautiful. You know, Alok Bhai, when, you know, in Sufism, when we reach a certain stage, every time we are asked, Deen ya Dunya? You want the Lord or you want this world? Now we will say, but we want both, yes, but the world through the Lord. The first step is Deen. Then you come back to dunya with the eyes of the Lord, with the will of the Lord, with the love of the Lord, with the joy of the Lord, with the peace of the Lord, and be, dance, play, have a war, whatever. But this first step is first step. Then you enter the lower network of forces like Arjuna in Chakravyuh, and you know, the Lord is with you and victory is certain. That is the third stage. That's why certain things are told to us, taught to us by the great masters, because they understand life much better. And if we understand that, and now very often people don't even read it. Why? Because then you feel stressed out. Why? Because, oh, now you have read something. Okay, we can't do it. Let's say you read a simple thing, never tell a lie. Speak always truth. You may realize that I am very weak in this aspect. I'm saying, supposing you feel. Then at least to justify ki dunya hai bolna padta hai. Say it is a painful thing. I know it contradicts what I am seeking. And pray to the Lord. Try to remain silent when you don't need to speak. You will see that within a short time this thing will go away. Sometimes never tell a lie doesn't mean you have to dhindora pito and tell everything to everybody. Stay silent. Don't have to reveal everything. Reveal everything only to the Lord. Yes. So never tell a lie. Sims, lust movements will come because young people, and it will take time. But don't justify it that it's natural. It's not. It's natural. Yes, it is natural. It's not abnormal. But it takes time. And offer it. It will come 1,000 times, 10,000 times. Keep offering. Then is the process of yoga. And not where the mind says all this is, well, it's my nature. Then stay with your nature, which is the lower nature. So this is the journey. And this relentless urge, aspiration for something higher and greater. Not to be satisfied with anything that is short of the ultimate perfect perfection that Sri Aurobindo has promised. Not to be satisfied with just some nice, beautiful psychic experiences or even psychic realization, even spiritual aspirations. But ultimately, the complete transformation, which has been bequeathed to us. This is our destiny. This we should be sure. It may take 1,000 years, doesn't matter. A journey of 1,000 years starts with one baby step, but take that step. Just because it is 1,000 years, and oh, it's 1,000 years, we'll see. Then if you do that, then after 500 years also we will say the same thing. Oh, so far, because you will be still 1,000 years behind. In fact, maybe even more behind, because the world would have moved at least some baby steps. So always, once this is the goal chosen, take time to choose the goal. That is what Swami Vivekananda said. Rethink, reflect. But once you have picked up, this is it, then try to put oneself wholeheartedly into it. Okay, so I just want to read this. What kind of aspiration Shurvindu had? Just imagine, someone who has mastered in every field, who is regarded as the apex in his, you know, in political life, as the one man who can lead India to freedom, the most dangerous man from the British Empire, and he did eventually pull it down. The person whom people would vie just to be near, so popular, if you want to put it like that. Erudite scholar with such a vast, abundant knowledge of every kind, who has read the Vedas and, you know, understands them just like that. He had his first realization of the self, which he describes as a mental realization, was when he had read something of the Upanishads long back. This is usually not quoted in his standard biographies, and that's why Shurvindu knew that there is a mental realization and a true realization. When he was reading the Isha Upanishad, he had a mental realization about it. I think it was just around the time he has come to India. Just around that time. A little before that. At 18 years age in UK, he just read and he had a mental realization. So, somebody would build a whole thing on just that. But here is Shurbindo wanting to move always forward. This is something amazing about Shurbindo. Many things are amazing about him. His compassion, his gentlemanliness, his vastness, the love he carries in his heart, seer, deep-hearted. If these things do not satisfy me, what then do I seek? I seek a light. Now he has given what doesn't satisfy him, the traditional Vedanta and, you know, usual Bhakti Marg. I seek a light that shall be new, yet old, the oldest indeed of all lights. I seek an authority that accepting, illuminating and reconciling all human truth shall yet reject and get rid of by explaining it all mere human error. I seek a text and a shastra that is not subject to interpolation, modification and replacement. That moth and white ant cannot destroy, that the earth cannot bury, not time mutilate. I seek an asceticism. See what he's seeking. Not that I have read the books. So, right now we are just talking of coming out of the lower network of forces and the aspiration. The higher network is only when we do that, then the, you know, it makes sense to talk about what is divine love, what is divine wisdom, how does it work? The divine bliss, divine peace, self-existent, they are the higher network of forces. But first we have to come out of this. And what should be the aspiration? I seek an asceticism. Look at Shurvindu speaking to be an ascetic. But what is that asceticism? I seek an asceticism that shall give me purity and deliverance from self and from ignorance without stultifying God and his universe. So not an asceticism where you discard the world, but purity with which you walk into the world and remain unsullied. I seek a skepticism that shall question everything, but shall have the patience to deny nothing that may possibly be true. So you want the truth of everything, not deny a priori. You want to understand why it is. I seek a rationalism, not proceeding on the untenable supposition that all the centuries of man's history except the 19th were centuries of folly and superstition. Oh, medieval ages, oh, Ramayana, Mahabharata, people were, you know, too imaginative, fantasy world. He says, no, that is not the knowledge or skepticism that I am seeking. but bent on discovering truth instead of limiting inquiry by a new dogmatism, the dogmatism of science, obscurantism, that it doesn't exist, only material world is the pure reality, sole reality. And furious intolerance, I may add in the name of tolerance, furious intolerance, speak about Rama and Ramayana, see, you know, you are pushing this world backward into some kind of primitive age. But speak about Karl Marx. See, this is called progressive modern idea. Equality for all. Sir, Rama also spoke of equality. Ganika, Ajamil, Bhyad, Gid, Gajad, Khaltarikana. Oh, this is all, no. I don't understand all this. Sir, this is a greater socialism. For God's sake, just listen, no. Shabri, Ganika, Ajamil, Bhyad, even Gid, Vulture, he is treating as his own. All are there. Even Asura, Vibhishan comes, joins camp and he accepts, this is socialism, sir. You people are reading too much. This is all myths and legends. Karl Marx. When all will have same economic freedom, then the world will be free. Sir, economic freedom will not give us inner freedom. There is no inner freedom. Money is the power. There is no God, and all this is fabrication. Glandular secretion. Your mind is going crazy. Sir, but what about, you know, enlightenment? This is another, you know. Don't follow all this stupidity. See, they will close your mind with dulcet tones. Then you try to say further, look at the furious intolerance. I can't argue with you illogical people. You cannot analyze. What is Asadoma Asadgamya? It means when there is tube light in the room, it is Asadoma Asadgamya. Science has accomplished it. That's what it meant. Analyze and see, it is already accomplished. Why are you having this as a prayer? It's religious. Such furious intolerance in the name of tolerance, which it chooses to call common sense and enlightenment. I seek a materialism that shall recognize matter and use it without being its slave. Divine materialism, matter, body, it's the instrument of the soul. Why not? But to be its slave, asanna mrityu, is not what is called as yoga. See, Sri Aurobindo speaks about outer life, though remain entrance in outer life. No, outer life is an expression of the spirit. It's one thing to be a slave of the dress. It's quite another to let your dress become the expression of who you are. They're two very different things. To say that Sri Aurobindo has, you know, not... So therefore, do whatever you feel like and wear whatever you feel like. Your dress should be an expression of who you are. A child, you know, a seeker after knowledge, whatever it is. A man of self-discipline, a noble character, a kshatriya, a woman of dignity and nobility, a frivolous person. Whatever it is, your dress should be an expression. Or it's simply a utilitarian. So... That also. It's convenient. Jeans, I'll wear it 20 days. So it's convenient, no? If it is faded and torn, I don't have to care. If it one more gets torn, it doesn't matter. So that is utilitarianism. Or branded. It show. I want to impress people. So whatever it is, the dress should be an expression of who we are. It is an expression. So, I seek an occultism that shall bring out all its processes and proofs into the light of day, without mystery, without jugglery, without the old stupid call to humanity, be blind, O man, and see. No, it is not enough to know that occult things exist. It's, we must know what these forces are and know how to handle them. In short, I seek not science, not religion, not theosophy, but Veda, the truth about Brahman, not only about his essentiality, but about his manifestation. This was what was missed in traditional Vedanta. They knew the truth of the Brahman in the self, but the manifestation was missed out. So, not a lamp on the way to the forest, but a light and a guide to joy and action in the world. So, lamp in the forest, this is dangerous, this world, so I have a lamp to show me the way. No. Like the sun blaze truth which lights up everything, the entire field. This is what I seek. The truth which is beyond opinion, The knowledge which all thought strives after, yasmin vigyate sarvam vigyatam. I believe that Veda to be the foundation of the Sanatana Dharma. I believe it to be the concealed divinity within Hinduism. I believe it to be knowable and discoverable. I believe the future of India and the world to depend on its discovery and on its application, not to the renunciation of life, but to life in the world and among men. And it is for this life in the world that we need to transit. If we want a divine life, ever a life which is blissful and free and tranquil and error-free, full of the sun-blazed truth, full of that love and sweetness which we dream of, then we have to transit from the lower network to the higher network. Lower network will give us appearances, but not the truth. They are necessary for man's progress to go through all this rigmarole drama of, they will use the same word, love. But the moment somebody says, I don't like you, I also hate you, love is gone. Finished. Love, people use this word, the one word most often profaned. What is that? John Keats. Most often. And then he describes, it's a psychic poem. Shobhinda has spoken very highly about it. Pierce by Shelley. That, you know, it is the profaned word. People use the word love, but they don't know the difference between likes, attractions, drawings, charm, and you know, everything mixed together with love. What is love? He says he lifts love to the state of adoration. That I can give you. I cannot give you what men call love. So everything, but the lower vital world, the lower world, the lower network will, what it is doing actually, the dream of perfection, it gives you a feeling of like it's doing exactly same as McDonald's food. It's the most original McDonald's and KFC and whatever fast food. You want perfect love? Here it is. Fall in love, see? This is love. Oh, wonderful. So what do I do next? Marry. Next. Have a child. Next. Where is the lawyer? Then the only way is to get rid through jokes, you know, about wives and husbands. It has tied you. All your life you just now struggle. How to come out of it? And all this in the name of holiness. And now where you have a chance, ki like you live together, don't get married, don't have children. Oh, this is so unholy. Strange. So this is the lower network. It will draw you knowledge. Oh, study, do this, do that, MA, MD, whatever. Then you will know knowledge, seeking after knowledge. And then one day your head will be swollen like the 10-headed Ravana. No, several times I have used this limerick. I am a graduate from Balliol College. My name is John. I know it. I am a graduate from Balliol College. All that is knowledge, I know it. All that I do not know is not knowledge. So it traps you in that. Then you want the comfort which you find in the divine arms. Oh, what divine arms? Make a nice house, nice bistara with bed with nice, you know, dunlap or whatever. See, I'll give you comfort. So what happens is, one day you have to sleep on the floor. And it is hell. And after some days, even that bed becomes hell. Why? Because lower network has its own law. It says, okay, sleep, enjoy. After some time, you start developing backache. So then you are miserable. So life becomes painful. Whereas if you live with this idea, karna fakiri, fir kya dilagiri, then... So this lower network will trap us in many ways. The lower vital world will present enjoyments after enjoyments, pleasures after pleasure of 100 kinds. And I often give this example with which you can stop. When you go to a temple, why are you going? You are going to meet the deity, isn't it? But see what happens when you are outside the temple. You will get replicas of the temple. You will get all kinds of prasad. You will find dress, this, that, everything in the market. Take it. And then, you know. But don't forget you are there for the deity. Nothing else. that counts. So in this world, that as we go to meet the divine, all these forces will want to continue their play ad infinitum. And why? Mother says, because nature enjoys it. We are toys for these people. We have television. These forces have our living television. When two people fight in the house, they say, dekho, abhi ek serial aane wala hai. Aaj pyar, kal mukka, kal pyar. This is the serial. Oh, they are, the gods have also given names. See, human beings, how they fight like crows. Crows are better. They must be having discussion. Do you think man is more evolved? No, I don't think so. Maybe, you know, we should done away with it. Let's start with dolphins. Gods will have that kind of discussion. No. We are the playthings, cattle of the gods. And these forces will continue this play ad infinitum. One pretext or the other. There is no limit. One justification or the other. So the first thing is, stop justifying this play. The mind should withdraw, step back. Even when you are going in, don't give the sanction. Then slowly, because the mind is the leader in man, mana, prana, sharira, neta. When it will not give the sanction, then slowly, how long will the vital keep on doing without the sanction? It looks to the mind, bade bhaiya, kya keh rahe ho? To bade bhaiya kehte, theek hai, achha hai, koi baat nahi, all life is yoga. To vital will go. When it looks at you, this is, by the way, works with children also. There are two kinds of parents. One will stop for everything. Then the other say, no, we are liberals. Bachcha hai, 8 saal ka, hum bhi uske saath mein daru peete hain, we are liberals. Then when he becomes an addict, then they say, you know, something went wrong. But the ideal style is, you let the child go, explain, reason out, then give the choice. At the same time, when he's doing something which you don't feel is the right thing, then you don't give a sanction. You can be silent. And that helps. You don't have to punish. Children understand, this doesn't have sanction of my parents. And then they will still do it. But something within, because who are parents? They are substitute for the child's developed inner sense. When the inner sense develops, then the child will decide. But till then, so this is how we have to deal with these parts, recalcitrant parts. Don't give the sanction. Then gently put the pressure. You want to go partying? Okay, practice detachment and equanimity. Practice remembrance. Don't let the discussion stoop low. This is all. You have to go to a marriage. Don't get caught up in that, you know, jija and, you know, that wo bhi aaye hain, phupa, kya kya hota, I don't know. And dance, start. Don't get rushed. It's an opportunity. Then use it as an opportunity to practice inner equanimity and detachment. It's a basic practice in the world one can practice. So this is how a yogin's life proceeds. On the surface, you will not see it. But it is going on inside. And then a time comes when he can enter the world. But prematurely, if he enters, with this analogy we can stop. I had written this in the form of a story. And Jugalda, then, Center of Education in charge, he had liked the story very much and he had read it out to people in knowledge. So the story ran like the, you know, egg and the chick. It was a very short story, like Sudden Tales. So the story is very simple, that the egg has two choices. Either to wait, go through the tap till the chick is ready and it's out. Then the chick can fly. But prematurely, if the egg goes out into the world, what happens? People will eat the egg and there is no chick which is born. So we too must understand that going prematurely into the world with everything, saying that, you know, everything is fine, we will be like the half-baked egg which will be eaten away. But if we allow, then a time will come when the chick can fly. Wait for that moment. It may take long, lifetime, doesn't matter. But that's what is important from a yogin's perspective. One has to live in the world, but to freely mix and everything to do, you know, as things are done. That's why the mother created the ashram. So that you are having all this, but still it is within a her zone of protection. You feel that, no? That something special atmosphere. Step out and see. The people may be the same. Though I don't believe there is a difference. Just living here makes a difference. But people, even if you go and meet, but you will see the difference of the atmosphere. You are suddenly vulnerable. You have stepped out of a zone where you are open to all kinds of forces and their violent attacks. Here they will come. They will show you their face and then mother will come between you and them. And last minute, they move away. So this is the little bit about the journey of yoga, which takes place in different parts and different stages. Thank you.